It's Friday, September 24th. The COVID vaccines are getting a boost. We start here. Dr. Fauci says we should think of it as a third dose, but not for everybody.
Anyone 65 plus can go ahead and get a booster. In fact, they should get a booster.
As the new shots roll out, who should start lining up and where? Meanwhile, fallout from the Haitian migrant crisis is getting ugly.
Because the optics for this White House is not great.
We talked to an ally of President Biden who is, in her words, pissed. And who said United Nations summits are snooze fests?
The fact is, a million people tuned in live.
Why one of the hottest boy bands in all of music was romping all over Unga. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Devin Dwyer. This morning, after months of anticipation and messy public debate, the COVID vaccine booster season we've been hearing about may finally be here.
Daily, no conflicts, yes.
Tonight, that decision from the CDC paving the way for millions more Americans to start getting booster shots.
Alt, no conflicts, yes.
A CDC advisory panel voted late yesterday to greenlight a third shot for millions of recipients of the Pfizer vaccine.
Which means that Americans who've already gotten two shots of the Pfizer vaccine could get a third as early as Friday.
They voted unanimously to recommend it for 13.6 million Americans over 65, and in a more divided vote recommended that those ages 18 to 64 at high risk of severe illness also get a boost.
So the ayes have it, and this recommendation is adopted.
ABC senior reporter Ann Flaherty has been covering the CDC and FDA more closely than just about anybody I know. Ann, it's always great to talk to you. You explain things so well. I mean, this seems like a big moment. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a big deal. It's a recommendation for anyone 65 plus can go ahead and get a booster. In fact, they should get a booster.
Yeah. Are we calling this? Let me interrupt you there. I mean, are we calling this a booster or is this a third dose?
I mean, for seniors, it will turn into a three-dose vaccine.
It's a reasonable decision to provide a third dose to people for whom it appears that immunity is waning and severe infection is an increasing risk in the age of Delta.
For younger people right now, it's not a guarantee. They're saying, you know, if you have a medical condition, you might want to get this, have that conversation with your doctor, weigh the risk benefits. Younger men, for example, might want to think twice about a booster because of rare reports of heart inflammation. So, you know, not a slam dunk for younger people. It is now the recommendation for seniors 65 plus.
So let's dig in on that. I mean, what are the conditions that should prompt a conversation with your doctor?
Well, the CDC has a list of people who are considered at higher risk of COVID. What is interesting is that list is somewhat general. It's not as specific as we've heard in the past with immunocompromised conditions such as cancer patients.
I think in all reality is that almost every American is at risk.
This can be as something as general as obesity.
Or have a medical problem, or if we don't have high risk, we live with someone who's high risk.
Diabetes, high blood pressure might become an issue.
Or we teach a group of kids that aren't eligible to get vaccine yet.
What's interesting about this, though, Devin, is that there's just not a whole lot of data that's out there. The data that we're looking at is for seniors. So I think for people who are as young as, you know, say under 40, this is not a slam dunk. They're looking at, you know, what is your health care? What is your health condition? Maybe it's just a conversation that you have with your doctor to try to figure out your comfort level with how far away you were removed from your initial vaccination.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really going to be an intimate decision for folks in that category, right? The under 65 with the health condition, really going to have to consult with your doctor. And I got to tell you, looking at the vote among the CDC panelists here, I mean, it was unanimous for those older Americans, but it was much more divided for these younger categories with health condition. I mean, 9-6. I mean, it wasn't an overwhelming vote of who needs one and why.
Yeah, that's right. There was even points in the debate where someone had said, this is actually very emotional.
You're tasked with difficult decisions, weighing the risks and benefits, extrapolating from sometimes the wealth and sometimes the paucity of data available.
These are doctors. These are people that have to look at patients and sit and look them in the eye and tell them whether or not they're protected.
One question that I've been asked in the last week or two is do the recommendations that we make today reflect who we value in society?
No vaccine is 100%. So what they want to say is, what are your chances? We know that immunity is not a cliff, it's a slide. We don't know where everyone is on that slide. So, you know, one thing I think that was really telling was that the CDC said that they will still consider you vaccinated, fully vaccinated with only two shots.
Ah, that's interesting, because so many places now you know you need to prove. It's like an access card to get in. And so they actually said that really they're going to stick with the two shot for now.
Right. What a lot of these doctors did seem to say and where they came up with their decision was they didn't want to stand in anyone's way.
I do not like this language, and I would prefer to delay the vote on this. But if I have to vote now, I would vote yes.
They know that this is there are people who are scared, and there are people who want to make sure that they are protected for various reasons. They just don't have the data to say this is absolutely something that you have to do. It's just not preventing them from doing it.
And so big picture, Anne, I mean, we've seen the numbers finally starting to come down nationwide, hospitalizations, new cases, deaths slowly on the decline. So is this booster program as much about slowing the spread, ending the pandemic, or is this more about really just protecting individual people who are vulnerable?
I think it's the latter. I don't think this is going to move the needle on the pandemic. Is it possible for vaccinated people to spread the virus? Yes. Is it possible that this third shot will reduce that likelihood? Yes, that is possible that this could stand up a little bit better than it has with just two shots. The reality is, though, it's the unvaccinated Americans who are spreading this virus and perpetuating the pandemic. It remains a pandemic of the unvaccinated. So I think this is about protecting individuals, particularly high-risk individuals. I do not think that this is going to change the trajectory of the pandemic, though, unfortunately.
So the bottom line, if you're an older American who got the Pfizer vaccine, get that third dose. If you're a high-risk adult, consider a booster. Talk with your doctor. And of course, for everyone else who got Moderna or J&J, stay tuned. More on those boosters coming likely in the next few weeks. Anne Flaherty, thanks so much for breaking it down for us.
Thanks, Devin.
Next up on Start Here, outrage over the Haitian migrant crisis at the southern border this week has some Democrats giving the White House an ultimatum. We speak with a key member of the Congressional Black Caucus right after this.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The scene on the U.S.-Mexico border in Del Rio, Texas this week has been extraordinary, and so has the criticism.
The situation at the border has only continued to deteriorate.
Two straight months of illegal border encounters above 200,000.
Republicans are furious. Hundreds of Haitian migrants have been allowed into the U.S. Many Democrats are appalled by those federal agents on horseback and the rapid deportation flights before many migrants even had the chance to file for asylum.
The Biden administration must halt these deportation flights and allow folks to make a legal asylum claim.
A top U.N. official has warned America might be violating international international law, and the top U.S. envoy to Haiti just yesterday quit in protest over it all.
Daniel Foote quitting, citing the inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants to Haiti.
Even some of the president's allies in Congress have joined the chorus of criticism, some comparing Joe Biden to Donald Trump, some going so far as drawing comparisons to slavery.
What we witness takes us back hundreds of years. What we witnessed was worse than what we witnessed in slavery.
Well, to make sense of this, how the situation is being handled and where things go from here, I'm joined now by Congresswoman Frederica Wilson of Florida, a member, of course, of the Congressional Black Caucus. She represents one of the largest Haitian American communities in the United States. Congresswoman, thank you so much for taking the time. I just want to ask you, how have you been making sense of the scenes along the border this week?
Well, I'm pissed. And I mean, to the nth degree. This has been created by coyotes who have been giving false information to our Haitian migrants, and that the borders are open and TPS has been granted to all Haitians. So these are migrants who went to South America to work on the World Cup and the Olympics and Brazil. But that work has dried up.
What's your sense about why they're showing up now?
Well, they're showing up now because the coyotes, you know, Mr. Biden extended TPS for Haitians. So this is a cottage industry that has grown up around these Haitians, and they're getting misinformation that the borders are open, that they brought in all the Afghan refugees. So they need to make their way to the border now to be allowed in.
Border Patrol officials say thousands of them, many with children, taking this narrow and treacherous path across the Rio Grande.
It's a 4,000-mile journey. It's a very dangerous route. Many have died and been assaulted and raped. And the migrants then walk across a long bridge. I mean, they have bust them through South America and dump them on the border of Mexico.
My wife, she's pregnant. She's sleeping on the floor without a bed.
The crowds under the bridge grew from 1,000 one day, 4,000, 8,000, 14,000, and then up to 15,000.
I've worked along the border my entire career, over 20 years of law enforcement. I've never seen nothing to what I saw in Del Rio, Texas. It was very disturbing.
It's hard not to feel for them and the conditions they were fleeing and why they've come. Do you have the sense, and some of your colleagues, certainly some immigrant advocates have been saying this, that the treatment of Haitian migrants is different from how the United States government has been handling other migrants that show up? Do you see a double standard in how the Haitians are being treated?
I definitely see a double standard, and it's not just Haitian migrants. It's all Black migrants are treated differently from non-Black migrants. I see it in the Africans. I see it in, it's very clear. There's no really humane treatment. So we're going to change that. This is an international tragedy.
Following that developing situation, the horror in Haiti, the Haitian president assassinated in his residence.
There's so much insecurity in Haiti.
And the earthquake has placed further strain on the nation's already strapped resources.
Are you getting any help from the government or any NGO?
They have no parliament. They have no Senate. They have no president. And the man who was appointed to serve as the prime minister is being investigated for murdering the president.
What does he believe of the comparisons being made between his administration and the Trump administration?
We could not see it as any more different from the policy of the prior administration, which the president feels, we all feel, was inhumane, immoral, ineffective.
When you say you're pissed, and I can hear it in your voice, it sounds like there's a lot of discontent to go around, the coyotes, certainly the international community. But talk to me about the White House. I mean, you've been an ally of the president. What do you want this White House to do?
I want them to allow these people to apply for asylum.
They're not deportations. People are not coming into the country through legal methods. And again, our policy process has continued to be the same with Haiti as it is for anybody coming through an irregular migration across our border.
And why do you think they're following the Trump policy of sending them back to do that process?
They'd better stop. They need to stop today. They don't need to send anyone back to Haiti. Haiti is not prepared. When you go to, when someone gets off the plane in Haiti, they say, where am I gonna live? What am I gonna eat? Where am I gonna work? What am I gonna drink? Who do I know? I've been gone for 15 years. This is unconscionable. We cannot follow the Trump policy. We have to create the Biden policy of humane treatment for Haitian refugees.
I'm surprised to hear you have to say that. Are you surprised after all the talk in the campaign in the early months of the administration that you're having to deliver that message now?
I am surprised too. Yes, I am. I'm appalled, really. And I think that the message is not being properly conveyed. Everyone else sees it. So, you know, I'm hoping by the end of this week, we will see some movement, because the optics for this White House is not great in this nation.
Congresswoman Frederica Wilson of Florida, thank you so much for sharing your views and your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's make our better future now. We can do this. It's within our power and capacity. Thank you. God bless you all.
At the United Nations General Assembly in New York City this week, COVID, climate change, the conflict in Afghanistan all dominated the diplomatic speed dating of world leaders. But the real sizzle in this year's summit came from a group of 20-something superstars from South Korea. That's K-pop boy band BTS and their hit song Permission to Dance, which the group performed while romping across the UN campus, literally. Millions of people streamed the video online. Thousands more watched live as the singers made a pitch before the assembly about taking the next generation seriously.
Instead of fearing change, this generation says welcome and keeps forging ahead.
For more on what kind of change BTS is pushing for, the impact they could have as global ambassadors, and how they ended up at the UN in the first place, I'm joined by my friend and ABC News anchor Juju Chang, who had an exclusive interview with BTS and Korean President Moon Jae-in. Juju, great to talk to you. Gotta admit, seeing those guys dancing all over the UN General Assembly was pretty captivating.
I was going to say, I know that you were among those who watched the video for research purposes only for
fan.
This interview, clearly.
So how does their song connect to their message?
Well, this song is really about permission to be lively, permission to dance. And this message is a call to action in many ways for young people around the world. They put out a hashtag, Your Stories, and they wanted to hear from their young fans, literally legions of them, who they asked to tell their stories, share their stories about what the pandemic is like, what their biggest concerns are moving forward.
There were times during the past 2 years when I too felt bewildered and troubled. But still here, we have people who cry out, let's live on, let's make the best of this moment.
And they wanted to bring the voices of young people literally onto the stage at the UN.
Yes, take a look at these pictures. Here, we have many who are trying hard to continue their friendships online in new ways, start learning new things.
And for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with just how big they are, I mean, this is an enormously popular music group, right? I mean, this is superstar power times 10.
I mean, the truth is, there are so many different metrics to tell you how big a global superstar this band is. But in terms of record and album sales, they've only rivaled the Beatles. That's just sort of how dominant they are in the music world. But honestly, the president of South Korea, Moon Jae-in, understood that he wanted to harness that power and that popularity into what diplomats refer to as soft power.
How are you trying to harness the Hallyu, the Korean cultural export, to get people to pay attention to these global issues?
The power of culture is very huge. I think this culture shows national prestige right away these days.
Yeah, and President Moon, of course, appointed BTS presidential envoys for public diplomacy and invited them to the UN. I mean, this was really a star-powered moment for what's normally a pretty dull gathering of global leaders, right? I mean, I've been to the UN General Assembly a few times. It looks more like kabuki theater than actual deal-making with real impact. I mean, what was your big takeaway from this? What's going to be the lasting impact of BTS taking the UN by storm?
You know, I think this is really about raising awareness. And the fact is, a million people tuned in live. And you could imagine it skewed young, that demo. That is an unprecedented number for a live UN convening.
The future is unexplored territory. And that's where we, more than anyone, will spend our time.
And so it brought a lot of attention to these issues of the pandemic, of climate action.
Vaccination was a sort of ticket to meeting our fans waiting for us and to being able to stand here before you today.
But ultimately, this was stagecraft, which is a lot of international diplomacy, right, Devin? I mean, these guys flew in from halfway around the world, pulled an all-nighter, sang and danced their hearts out in the august halls of the United Nations, and they got a lot of attention for doing that.
Yeah, they sure did, and probably a lot more eyeballs to the UN General Assembly than it's had in a pretty long time.
Yep.
That's for sure. Juju Chang, thank you so much. And of course, catch the entire interview with BTS and South Korean President Moon later this morning on Good Morning America and tonight on Nightline. Thanks so much, Juju.
My pleasure, Devin. Anytime.
Okay, we're going to take one more quick break, but when we come back, a glimmer of hope if you've ever dreamt of a universal charger for all your electronic devices. One Last Thing is next.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
And one last thing. As you head into the weekend and maybe back into that tangle of charging cords to power your smartphone after this pod, the tyranny of the custom charger, you know, those different brands and newer models of electronics with their different power ports, well, that could be on the rocks.
C'est-à-dire un port USB.
The European Union yesterday announced it's preparing to mandate a universal standard for the cords that charge smartphones, tablets, cameras, portable speakers, even video game systems sold across the EU.
It's just to make the life of our fellow citizen a little bit more easy.
It would be a one-size-fits-all electronics charger mandate. It's meant to help the environment and our bank accounts.
The typical person in the EU currently owns three different chargers, but only uses two of them regularly.
Researchers found that disposed old charging cables ditched by consumers who upgrade generate 11,000 tons of waste per year. Then, of course, there's the cost to all of us, not to mention the headaches from upgrading our charging systems with the new models. Now, Apple, which makes some of the world's most popular and widely used phones, says a mandate would harm innovation. But many tech experts this morning say a common charger makes a heck of a lot of common sense.
No, it's not at all against innovation. By the way, it's not against anyone.
But first, those European plans have to become law. Then we'll see if it inspires any similar moves here across the pond. Start Here is produced by Kelly Therese, Brenda Salinas-Baker, Lewis Millman, Madeline Wood, David Toledo, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimbel, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia Deshishku. And special thanks this week to Chris Berry, Elizabeth Schulze, Nadine Schubele, Deborah Kim, Teresa Kim, and Alex Choi. I'm Devin Dwyer. Brad's back on Monday. Have a great weekend.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.